Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Joshua Cross. He is a writer in the eastern side of the United States, and he is out with an anthology, a collection of short stories. It's called Black Bear Creek, the book. I want to welcome you into Sioux City, but this is not the first time you've actually been welcomed to the Sioux City area, right?
No, I've been to Sioux City a number of times over the past 10 years. Yeah.
So you have your father-in-law lives here and his wife, but we're going to get into these stories now because you have put together an anthology, Black Bear Creek. It is an area, it's a fictional area, but it is in a very real area of the United States. So can you kind of explain where all these stories are set?
Yeah, I grew up in Raleigh County, West Virginia, in a city called Beckley, West Virginia, and Black Bear Creek is a fictional community, but it's based very much on some of the smaller, more rural communities that are tucked down in the Coal River Valley in Raleigh County in southern West Virginia. So it is a fictional town, but I based it a lot on places that are real. But I wanted to fictionalize it because, you know, if you run a risk whenever you're writing about a real place is of people pointing out inaccuracies. So I think writing about a fictional place let me have some freedom there.
The stories themselves move from character to character. It's not the same character in every story, and it kind of moves in time and such, but there's a lot of themes that run through a lot of the stories. So can you explain what you had in mind as you put this collection together and what you wanted to show about the people who work in the Coal River Valley?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I grew up there, but I never started writing about southern West Virginia until I moved to Oklahoma to do my PhD program. And I've heard other writers talk about that, how you can write about home once you leave home. And I found that to be true. I wanted to write a lot about, you know, obviously coal mining plays a big part in these stories, either directly or indirectly, and because that's the major industry, or one of the major industries in the area, that tourism and logging. But that was a common theme, but also I've always really loved stories about families, about relationships, and so I think that ended up coming through in a lot of these stories about, you know, the relationship between families or loved ones, and just the sort of day-to-day lives of the people in this region.
As I read these stories, I had in mind the Alcoholics Anonymous theme of one day at a time, and that seems to be how a lot of these families live, is one day at a time, because you go down to the coal mine and you don't know if it's day or night when you're in there, and you're dirty and you come out, and usually it's all they can do to get from one day to the next, and they pacify their pain by drinking. And so why is that this is such a hard life for people, but yet there's so many people that are involved in it? Because you think that with somebody experiencing those things, you just want to get out of the industry altogether.
Yeah, that's West Virginia in general has over the last century, I think, has seen a great decline in population. In large part because of that, because for so many people in that area who don't have a college degree, who don't, you know, some have high school degrees, some don't even have that, about the best job, about the best way to support a family for so many people is through the mining industry in one way or another, and including my own family. My grandfather was a coal miner, starting when he left the Navy after World War II, and he mined until his retirement. My father is an electrician, but has always worked in the mining industry. He's worked for a company that makes electrical supply equipment for mines. So for so many people in the area, there aren't a lot of good paying jobs other than mining. I think, I could be wrong, but I know pretty recently the number one employer in the state was Walmart. And so for so many people, a good paying job to support a family is the mines or Walmart or something connected to the mine. And, but so many people who don't want that life have been forced to leave the state, have been forced to leave the area to go other places. You know, there's, I know earlier in the 20th century, there was a lot of West Virginians moved places like Chicago, like Cleveland, you know, for these factory jobs to kind of escape the mines. So it's one of those difficult situations where the work is hard. It takes a real toll. You know, my grandfather contracted black lung disease as a coal miner. And so for so many of these men, it wrecks their health. And you're right that a lot of people turn to alcohol and drugs to get through that. That's part of why there was such an opioid epidemic in West Virginia. But, you know, for so many of them, there isn't much alternative. And these are people who, so many of them have, they and their families have lived in this area for hundreds of years, for generations. And, you know, they're living on the family land. And so the idea of leaving that, I think, for so many people in real life and the characters of this, of my stories, I think so many of them, it's that idea of leaving all of that is almost impossible.
There's this idea of the alcoholism we talked about in the book and in the stories, and it really rung true to me in the stories that I've heard of the 40s and 50s of the immigrants from Eastern Europe coming over to the Sioux City area and working in the packing houses. A lot of them were alcoholics, but they were functional alcoholics. They drank just enough to ease their pain every night, but by God, they always got up and went to work the next morning. And so how did they straddle that line of just enough alcoholism in their lives to keep themselves functional at work the next day?
I think for so many of them, they probably didn't have much of a choice. You know, you don't go to work in a job like this, you're not going to have a job anymore. And but at the same time, I think, you know, for somebody who works in a mine or in a plant, a factory, something like that, you know, it would be so dangerous to be drunk at work. So I think that for a lot of people there is that, and for the characters in these stories, I think there is that idea of that self-medication through drink, through drugs, to deal with the pain and their day-to-day lives, but at the same time having to, because it's your only option, you've got to do what you can to keep going. And I think that you're right that the sort of functional alcoholism allows people, these characters, to keep going.
There are 10 stories in this collection, or 9 stories in this collection, and as you put these together as a writer, how do you reach your arc and decide how you're going to set these stories out in the anthology so it makes some chronological sense?
That was one of the most difficult things for me in putting this together as a collection, because so many of these stories I'd written separately, individually, and then, you know, working on each story to make it good on its own, make it able to stand on its own, then how do you put them together in a book? And that was something that I revised and changed and rearranged I don't know how many times, and then when I sent the collection to the publisher, to Southeast Missouri State University Press, the editor, the publisher there, also made some suggestions for ways to rearrange. I was looking, though, for connections between stories, but also trying to spread some of the stories out so it didn't feel like you were reading the same story too close together. So if a story had a very similar theme to another one, I might have, you know, tried to put a story or two in between them. I also, when I was working on arranging the stories, one thing I did was read the end of one story and then the beginning of the next to see how they would flow from one to the next. Because I know most people probably read a collection of short stories and probably stop at the end of each story. I know that's usually how I read a collection like this. But I also wanted to, if somebody were reading them one after the other, would they be able to transition into that next story? Or would the change of point of view or voice be too jarring? So that was something that I looked at. And then also a couple, most of them are set around in the same time period. Most of them have that sort of first person or third person narrator. There's a couple that are a little outside of that, and I wanted to sprinkle those in a little later in the book to kind of, you know, a story like Those Girls, the fifth story in the book, is the only one that's set outside of this area, outside of West Virginia. And so I didn't want that one to be too early in the book. You know, I wanted to have the place set up, the region established before I moved outside of it. And same thing with the final story, Augury, is one that takes place a century before the rest of them. And so that's kind of why I saved that one for later in the book, because I felt like it was such a departure from the rest.
There are little nuggets in these stories about things that go on in the coal mines, having to do with taking people's clothes if they leave them outside when they're in the shower, or things like that, or having they mess with people's lunches, that type of thing. Those stories had to come from somewhere just to get an idea, because clearly I don't think you've ever worked in a coal mine. So when you find those stories, is that lore or legends that are passed down that you just hear and take in by virtue of the fact that you're from this area?
Some of them are, yeah, some of these are definitely stories that I've picked up from talking to people, but honestly, a lot of them come from my father. The story you mentioned, the stealing the clothes, that happened to my father. Before I was born, he worked on a construction crew in a mine, and his first day on the job, the other men on the crew did that to him. You know, he's 18-year-old kid, fresh out of high school, sort of first job sort of thing, and made the mistake of leaving his clothes out, and so the other guys took them outside into the freezing cold, and you know, he learned the hard way to make sure to put your clothes away where no one else could get them. And for those guys, I think that was part of, you know, an initiation, a sort of haven, right? Of more of a good natured prank than any kind of genuine malice. In the book, in that particular story, I think it has a bit more of a malicious intent, or at least the character Jacob feels like they're doing it out of spite. So yeah, I've never personally worked in a coal mine, so a lot of the knowledge I have of it comes from family, from people I know, and then also just reading extensively. I read a lot of books, both nonfiction and fiction, that cover coal mining. And so, yeah, a lot of these stories are either details like that are either secondhand or I made them up. I think you mentioned the messing with people's lunch. That one I think was just purely fiction. I don't remember getting that one from anyone. So
I got the sense as I read these stories that some of these stories about what goes on in the family are things that a coal miner, a manly coal miner, would never want known. And did you have that sense that these guys put on a face during the day of these tough, rugged men, but realistically their hearts are as fragile as the most sensitive fellow you could ever meet?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's a good description of a lot of the characters in this story, or in these stories, that, yeah, they're in these jobs where, yeah, you have to be strong. You have to be, you can't let things hurt you physically or emotionally. You can't show it. So for so many of them, there is this vulnerability because they're human beings, and that vulnerability, I think, does come out more at home. And, you know, a lot of the men I've known who have worked in these jobs, that's true for them. They're the strong, silent type, that their suffering is personal. And so if they let that out, it is in private. It's not with the other men that they're working with. It's at home. It's with their families, or it's not at all. And, you know, that's not the healthiest way to deal with pain and fear, but for so many of them, that's reality, I think.
Well, I tell you, it's an area of the country that I was not familiar with before I read the collection of stories here, and I fell in love with the book. I read it chronologically. People can jump around in a short story collection because that's how they're designed, but this collection was so fantastic. It is called Black Bear Creek, Their Stories by Joshua Cross. It's available now. Go on Amazon, pick up a copy. It's available from Southeast Missouri State University Press. Joshua is a lecturer in the Department of English at Coastal Carolina University, and he has Sioux City roots. So go pick up a copy and support an author and a writer that has Sioux City at least ties. So Joshua, fantastic offering here, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
I'm a man with a working man's PhD.